information is free.
The law? Oh,
there is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerers of death's construction. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 175th episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 25th, 2010, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups, war pigs, Betrayus, and the McChrystal moment, G20 questions, mobs, ads, and a state of emergency, still spill, SIGs and eugenics, feds, FOIA, and culture jamming, plus all the latest from Food World Order and Cyberspace War with food, facts, and fiction, and the kill switch, and internet ID, all that and so much more, June 25th, 2010, episode 175 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Darkness, world stops turning as you hear the bodies burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. Begging mercies for their sins, Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh Lord, yes.
That was, of course, War Pigs. Cake from their B-Sides and Rarities collection from 2007. Of course, covering the Black Sabbath classic. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Can you believe it? It's the 175th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. It's June 25th, 2010. And of course, this is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And thanks to our fine list of affiliates like ZeroPointRadio.com, Blasting It Out Live, Simulcast, as well as on their 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming, RevereRadio.net, also broadcasting live. And a huge thanks to Free Radio Olympia, 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, FrOlympia.org, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, 90.7 FM in Kiseloff, Alaska, KWMD, OneSkyRadio.com, PhantomRadio.org, 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, Canton, Georgia, 87.9 FM, thanks to StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and Radio23.org. Those are just some of the ways and some of the fine folks that help spread the information, the open source intelligence available to all of us. We're just trying to codify it and do the data mining and share. You can, of course, make contact with me, Media Monarchy, as your keyword or username on Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Cafe Press, where we do have Media Monarchy t-shirts, organic cotton, made in America shirts. We're streaming live video as we speak on ustream.tv/Media Monarchy. You can send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. We're on Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org. Spread out all over the worldwide wiretap. We always like to glance at Google News and see what they say, the most important things happening, which if I didn't know better, I would think it were sporting events. Financial reform to give Obama limited lift at G20. And the Toronto Star reporting just being near the G20 security zone can get you arrested, and we will cover both of those stories. The G20 meetings, of course, kicking off in Toronto. All the world's a stage. And what we try and do here is shine a light on what we have found to be the shadows on the wall in Plato's allegory of the cave. And so we talk a lot about these boogeymen, whether that's Obama or Bush or McChrystal or Osama or Monsanto or Lieberman or any of those things and more that we're going to get to in this jam-packed episode 175. So much is available now. So much is at our fingertips, and I think we have to use it or lose it, and or use it until we lose it. The military-industrial complex giveth, the internet, and of course they're waiting for a catalyzing, catastrophic event to heavily curtail, and that's why we started cyberspacewar.com just about a year ago. We are in the chat room on zeropointradio.com. They will be broadcasting live tonight, Clyde Lewis's event here in Portland at the Kenton Masonic Lodge. his monthly live events. Come out to the Masonic Lodge if you're in the Portland metro area. Or you can go on groundzeromedia.org or zeropointradio.com and you can listen live and you can help support those outlets as well as Clyde. And again, I'll mention the donate button we have just on the top right there on mediamonarchy.com. We appreciate the donations we get. Any amount is appreciated. $10 donation gets you the exclusive DVD from Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.org. 2020 hindsight, censorship on the front line. I guess that's all my business. We should probably just get into the news. McChrystal falls on sword after truthful comments on Afghan war. This is one of the stories that we cover on the latest episode of The New World Next Week, my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. And there's a lot swirling around this, and again, this is one of those massive stories that I'm not going to try and scoop up all the available data for you like I do from some other more uncovered stories. But nonetheless, I do have a lot of audio, video, documentation, links, and the backstory. That's it. That's the key. The context. The subtext. Alan Dulles said, "The American public doesn't read." In the mainstream media, guilty of lying by omission, not always giving the backstory, and again, that's where the alternative media comes in. And I'm not the greatest. I'm just one of many who saw the catalyzing, catastrophic events of 9/11 and decided to dig deeper. And now, nearly 9 years later, has brought us here. 175 episodes, that's not counting all the B-sides and mixtapes and interviews and videos. We're all just trying to learn. Because things do seem to be rapidly changing, quickly. And I think we could all agree on that. So let's just hit some quick headlines detailing this McChrystal falling on his sword. We do have some of the updates at the top from CBS and Danger Room and the Associated Press and ABC News and Tarpley.net. But perhaps let's get a little backstory before we dive into all of this and hear a couple of moments of Paul Craig Roberts discussing the McChrystal moment on Russia Today.
All McChrystal was doing was letting off steam the way military people do. They have to go fight the civilians' wars. The civilians are too incompetent to use diplomacy, and so the military has to go die for the incompetent civilians in the government. And all he's doing is letting off steam. He didn't say anything of any consequence. And it just shows what fragile egos the insecure people in the United States government have. They're just basically babies. Now, that said, I don't mind if they fire him, because any militarist we can get rid of, good. But they should also fire Obama. I mean, what is he doing carrying on a war in Afghanistan? Afghanistan has never done anything to the United States. We've been there longer than we've been in any war, ever. In fact, twice as long. The whole thing is absurd. And what McChrystal should have said when his remarks came out, instead of apologizing, you know, all Americans have to apologize for everything they say. That's part of our culture. Any belief you have, you're not entitled to it. You have to apologize for it. What he should have said is, you know, here I am fighting these wars for these incompetent politicians who don't know how to use diplomacy. I'm getting all these troops killed. And for what? That's what he should have said. And that would have brought the issue home to the people, so that they put some brake on this pointless, mindless war that's bankrupting the country.
Paul Craig Roberts discussing the McChrystal moment. Now, something I can only briefly reference in the 10-minute videos, The New World Next Week, is an article from Kurt Nemo, and we want to get into it because I think it lays out pretty much this story and, again, gives you the context and the subtext, the all-important text. The farce that is the war in Afghanistan is coming apart at the seams. McChrystal's sharp comments about Obama, Biden, and the administration published by Rolling Stones are not so much about disrespect, as the script-reading corporate media talking heads would have it, but rather about a policy in disarray in Afghanistan. And briefly, we'll quickly note that this was written in the hours leading up to McChrystal officially falling on his sword. It went over a two-day period, Tuesday, Wednesday. So this was in the eye of the storm before McChrystal had fallen on his sword. Continuing. Obama, the Wunderbar teleprompter reader and little else, is instructed to push the completely untenable prospect that the United States can win the so-called war in Afghanistan, a country often referred to as the graveyard of empires. The British, the Russians, Alexander the Great, and Genghis Khan either fell to the Afghans or made painful concessions. The British suffered one of their greatest military defeats in the Khyber. 16,500 British soldiers and civilians retreating after defeat in Kabul were slaughtered by the Afghans. One person was spared to tell that story. The establishment knows it cannot win in Afghanistan, and the claim that the U.S. military is there to defeat the Taliban and Al-Qaeda is nothing but transparent propaganda. Afghanistan is a black hole sucking up men and machinery for the sake of death merchant profiteers. It's valuable real estate to be held, not conquered. Real estate where opium grows for the sake of CIA off-the-books operating capital funding covert wars against enemies of the global elite. The fantastic profits earned from opium also flood the coffers of the masters of the casino economy on Wall Street. As Catherine Austin Fitz has documented, without this influx of laundered underground and illicit money, Wall Street would have collapsed long ago. After the so-called Afghanistan assessment was supposedly leaked to the CIA's favorite newspaper, Washington Post, last year, the report recommended in Pentagon speak securing the population, aiding in providing good governance, building and mentoring the Afghan security forces. McChrystal threatened to resign if he was not provided with resources to accomplish the mission. In other words, McChrystal said he needed more troops, something our rulers will not do, not because it's politically unpopular, but because the mission in Afghanistan is not to win. The unstated mission is to chew up men, resources, and a lot of money loaned out by international banksters. The mission is to keep an unwinnable conflict on low heat indefinitely, or at least until the United States collapses from the crushing debt burden. McChrystal made his opinion about the corporatization of the war known in April when he criticized the use of private sector contractors. Quote, "I actually think we would be better to reduce the number of contractors involved," end quote. He suggested increasing the number of troops if necessary or, quote, using a greater number of Afghan contractors or Afghans to help with the mission, according to the Boston Globe. Instead of acting as the CEO of a floundering occupation designed to last forever, McChrystal hinted he would resign. Three officers at the Pentagon and in Kabul told McClatchy that the McChrystal they know would resign before he'd stand behind a faltering policy that he thought would endanger his forces or the strategy, it was reported last September. Now McChrystal and his boys are making sarcastic and derogatory and even adolescent remarks about Obama and Biden in the presence of Rolling Stone journalists. McChrystal realizes this behavior will likely, and most assuredly did, result in his forced resignation. He's obviously arrived at a decision to publicly express his contempt for Obama and the administration. Contempt for the Chicago Mafia errand boy and accomplished teleprompter reader is now a popular sport, not only in Washington but around the country. He'll likely go down as the most reviled puppet of the ruling elite in modern history. but another marionette awaits behind the curtain. Now, we don't have to agree with every single thing mentioned in there. And we know that Obama is beefing up the troops. There are more troops going in, even possibly to points beyond the previous reviled puppet. We had legal analysts predicting McChrystal would be fired. We had the Telegraph reporting that he had tendered his resignation a good 12 hours before it actually happened. But here's another key point. This from Politico. The mother of the slain football player and Army Ranger Pat Tillman sought to warn Obama against making McChrystal his commander in Afghanistan. Mary Tillman said in an unpublished interview this year that she wrote to Obama and called senators and members of Congress seeking to block McChrystal's appointment when she learned that he was under consideration for the post. McChrystal has been accused of involvement in covering up the fact that Tillman had been shot by his own comrades, having approved a citation for a posthumous medal that attributed his death to enemy fire, though the general also penned a memo warning the White House against describing the circumstance of Tillman's death for fear of future embarrassment. An official investigation blamed McChrystal for inaccurate and misleading assertions in the formal recommendation of Tillman for a Silver Star. Mary Tillman said she emailed Obama a short letter saying that McChrystal was not what he seemed. We have a few other related war whores updates to go over, and it's all on this main post, McChrystal Falls on His Sword. And we'll hit the first one. The big bold one at the top of the updates from the aforementioned CIA's favorite newspaper, The Washington Post, U.S. indirectly paying Afghan warlords as part of security contract. The U.S. military is funding a massive protection racket in Afghanistan, indirectly paying tens of millions of dollars to warlords, corrupt public officials, and the Taliban to ensure safe passage of its supply convoys throughout the country, according to congressional investigators. The security arrangements, part of a $2.16 billion transport contract, violate laws on the use of private contractors as well as Defense Department regulations and dramatically undermine larger U.S. objectives of curtailing corruption and strengthening effective governance. There's that word again, in Afghanistan. All this came out in a report released late Monday. The Washington Post has the link, warlords.pdf. And on down the related war whores updates list, alternet.org on the U.S. war addiction, funding enemies to maintain trillion-dollar racket. U.S. officials back away from July 2011 Afghan withdrawal deadline. Surprise, surprise. And that's what's swirling around this. So the story gets painted as McChrystal ran off at the mouth and you gotta go. But it's ultimately about the cracks showing massively to the mass amounts of people who are still kind of rubbing their eyes and waking up to maybe what the hell's going on. They tacitly supported it all through the Bush administration, and now somehow some of them think, oh, this just all started under the new puppet. But I think a growing amount of people, again, are rubbing their eyes saying, this didn't just start with Obama. This didn't just start with Bush. This is an ongoing plan. We've seen a lot of the same guys and the families and the bloodlines and the organizations and the think tanks and the roundtable groups. That's what we're getting at. That's what's going on. Still more related to War Horrors updates, but let's tie in a recent appearance of many. And he posts them all on Tarpley.net, of Webster Tarpley on Russia Today on the Afghan policy in ruins.
Congressman Kucinich has been against the war in Afghanistan from the start. It's no secret that Afghanistan's location makes it an important place for many global powers. Bordered by Iran on the west and Pakistan on the east, the country has some pretty influential neighbors. But how do all those competing interests play out on the ground, and how is all of that affecting the war? Well, joining me to help discuss this is investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. So Webster, first of all, we have China, India, the United States, Iran, all with different interests and agendas in Afghanistan. Tell us about some of those interests.
Well, I think the first thing to do is to see that the announced purpose of the U.S. presence, which is supposedly to combat al-Qaeda, is simply preposterous, and I don't think anybody takes this seriously anymore. The point of this is geopolitics. It's about oil. It's about the great game in this part of the world, domination. And the reason that the U.S. is there right now, as distinct from before, is a policy which aims at taking the civil war in Afghanistan and exporting it massively into Pakistan through the Pashtun population and also to some degree through Balochistan. The goal being to break up Pakistan, to create all kinds of problems for Pakistan, to weaken the central government in Islamabad, and above all to make sure that Pakistan never serves as a critical energy corridor between Iran, where the oil is, and China, where the oil is needed. And Pakistan would become, as some people have said, pipelineistan between those two. The U.S. doesn't want that to happen. The larger purpose of this, of course, is that Pakistan is a friend of China, and China plus Pakistan plus the Indian Muslims are more powerful than India. So the U.S. has got to do something to redress that balance. So we get into that side of the great game. Inherent in all this is the contradiction between the announced purpose and the real reason. We're working under the strategy announced by Obama at West Point last December. And even at that time, everybody said what he had announced was a Rube Goldberg strategy, a contraption that makes no sense, because he said, our goal is to attack al-Qaeda. At the same time, the U.S. intelligence was saying, al-Qaeda is in Pakistan. Bin Laden lives there, they say, so-called al-Qaeda. But the U.S. forces are not going there. They're going into Afghanistan. So what sense does this make? Well, it only makes sense if you see that the idea is to get the civil war going into Pakistan. Now, there's another option that's been built in more recently, which is that if this doesn't seem to be succeeding, we had on the front page of the Washington Post that if a large terror stunt is pulled here in the United States, staged, and if you can tie that to Pakistan, the U.S. will feel free to bomb or invade Pakistan. And that would be the way to accelerate this process. But as you see, it's a hopeless mass of contradictions, deceptions within deceptions.
And that's what Webster Tarpley, I think, is so good at breaking down with the historical background. Pentagon buys Russian helicopters to use in Afghanistan. Oh, it's irony on a base level, but it's a hoot. Blackwater gets $120 million U.S. government contract. CIA hires Z. Remember, that's the new Blackwater name, X-E-Z. CIA hires Z to guard facilities in Afghanistan and elsewhere. 17 Afghan soldiers go AWOL from language school in Texas. 10 still missing. More on that from allgov.com. And when I hear language school, you should probably instantly think Muhammad Atta, Lee Harvey Oswald. A good clip of the Honorable Dr. Congressman Ron Paul on the McChrystal moment and also the Gulf oil spill and more. AllGov again asking the question, why are so many returning veterans so angry? Well, I think if you take into account all that we've gone over so far, it may give you some kind of idea. And again, they rah-rah-rah and propagand you into joining the services or make it to where you have no option because your cities are blown out and there's no choice. But then they can't even take care of you if you make it out the other end of the endless meat grinder wars of aggression based on lies for resources. But the last War Horror update note, and there is a video from WTVD, one dead, two hurt in a Fort Bragg, North Carolina training accident. And again, this has all been on the McChrystal Falls on His Sword post on MediaMonarchy.com, and we'll quickly note a comment from Charles D. While I think that any measure that asserts civilian control over the military is a good one, replacing McChrystal with Petraeus, Bush's favorite general, and continuing an unnecessary and illegal war makes it clear that it matters little whether the president is Republican or Democrat. We still get empire. This war, like the one in Iraq, is about funneling taxpayer money to big corporations, not about national security or terrorism. War is indeed a racket, and anyone who supports that racket is a criminal, regardless of whether or not they talk to Rolling Stone. that is one thing that we kind of brushed by, that after McChrystal fell on his sword, prodded doubtless by forces above and beyond the Oval Office, Obama ousted McChrystal in favor of General Petraeus, who now combines the post of CENTCOM theater commander with that of NATO commander in Afghanistan. This move is deriving from the inherent fecklessness and incompetence of the administration, especially from the imperialist point of view. Again, Tarpley.net, breaking down the connections of Petraeus and the possibility that he will be the 2012 GOP candidate. We should probably dive deeper into all of that as long as we're on the topic. But we should probably just move on. I think I joked last week about falling more under the spinning beach ball of doom as my browser has been crippled under the weight lately of just the mass amounts of news. And again, I'm a one-man band and trying to cram all of this stuff all out and do it all somewhat well-produced and live and well done for you. But it, of course, makes all the systems start to drag down, and now I'm spinning more plates and looking at video and checking levels and doing all that stuff. But anyway, let's get to this week's massive news purge for June 24th. The 624 News Purge War Pigs, of course, named as they have been quite recently after our intro song. But we're going to get to the EconoCrash updates first with a story from The Telegraph. Lord Rothschild joins World Gold Council to put £12.5 million into bullion vault. Tim Levine of Augmentum Capital, a fund backed by Lord Rothschild's RIT Capital Partners, said the investment was not a bet on the gold price, but on the future growth of the Bullion Vault platform, which stores physical gold for private clients in London, New York, and Zurich. And we did add the poster of, I believe, the 1934 film from 20th Century, The House of Rothschild, which is actually available on archive.org, public domain. New poor, peddling relief, firms put debtors in deeper hole. That is from the New York Times. And again, we've now been tracking the new financial world order for going on 2 years. Again, as the latest engineered collapse is happening all around our ears. Speaking of Rothschild, that's how the families and the banksters work. But we want to hop to allgov.com yet again. And if you drill down and hit some of the links in there, you'll go to this local report of folks jailed for debt in the 21st century USSA.
People arrested on the street and thrown in jail, all because of unpaid bills. Why is this happening? Thanks for joining us for the Star Tribune Sunday Preview. I'm Glenn Howitt, and this is Chris Sears. Chris, you wrote the story. Tell us why people are being arrested and why the rest of us should be concerned.
People are being arrested in part because creditors are becoming more aggressive about collecting old debts. What's happening is this. People are falling behind on their bills. And when they ignore a court judgment, then a creditor has the right to actually get a warrant issued for your arrest. Now, what this means is that you could be driving to work, you could be at work, or you could be at your house. And then one day, a sheriff's deputy might show up and say he or she has a warrant for your arrest. And that could mean you're brought into jail, and it's essentially over an unpaid debt. A lot of people don't realize this can happen, and that's part of the shock of when it does happen, is they have no idea that when they fail to pay a debt, that it could actually lead to jail time. Now, we spoke to a number of people who've had this experience, some of whom are still quite distraught about the experience. One woman, for instance, was trying to park downtown one afternoon, and she was arrested on the street, all over a $250 JCPenney credit card.
I remember having friends say, "Oh, don't worry. They got rid of debtor's prison years ago." But of course, it's all coming back. It's all meant for you. It's all been meant for all of us all along. They just sell it along the way at some other group that maybe you don't like. And you can get behind that. Screw those guys. But ultimately, it's about all of us, and that would be the little people. Corporate entities as modern-day street gangs. More on that from Gonzalo Loria. 83rd bank failure so far in 2010. This pace more than doubles last year. That's from USA Today, and you'll know we tracked FDIC Friday for the better part of last year. And now we're already on pace to beat last year's number. AP poll says the public isn't buying Wall Street reform. Oh, but why not? A couple of notes related to one of our big stories last week on Afghana treasure. We went over it a lot on episode 174 as well as on the previous episode of The New World Next Week. But here, a little bit of follow-up from the New York Times. JP Morgan makes moves aimed at overseas expansion. And then another one from the old gray lady, the New York Times. World's mining companies covet Afghana treasure. That being, I believe, coined by CorbettReport.com. But our last note on EconoCrash is an update. And we'll hop over to ofgoatsandmen.blogspot.com with a triple take on Obama declaring victory. Wall Street wins again. From CNBC, the financial reform bill will likely hurt consumers more than banks because Wall Street will find a way to get around it, said Richard Bove, banking analyst at Rochdale Securities. News Channel 8, Obama declares victory on a financial reform bill. Obama declared victory Friday, that's today, June 25th. After congressional negotiators reached a dawn agreement on a sweeping overhaul of rules overseeing Wall Street banksters. Lawmakers shook hands on the compromise legislation at 5:39 a.m. East Coast time after Obama administration officials helped broker a deal that cracked the last-minute impediment to the deal, a proposal to force banks to spin off their lucrative derivatives trading business. And the third bit on Obama declaring victory. From Bloomberg, banks dodged a bullet as U.S. Congress dilutes trading rules. Legislation to overhaul financial regulation will help curb risk-taking and boost capital buffers. What it won't do is fundamentally reshape Wall Street's biggest banks or prevent another crisis. More of the same. And as we've kind of said, again, as we've now been on the air long enough to track the last few years of the previous puppet Bush administration and track the prep, the massive Madison Avenue PSYOP advertising campaign that sold you the Changeluyah. And a lot of the things, again, just looking at patterns and a lot of the names and organizations throughout recent history, if you can see that A led to B led to C, it's not going too far out on a limb to say that D is probably coming next. Bush was all about war and the terror state and the military-industrial complex. All that stuff is still in motion. It's, of course, a self-fulfilling machine. But now the new operation has been going on for quite some time, and that's been brought to you by Rothschild's Choice. We said early back in 2008, even when we were still saying that it was probably going to be Hillary before magically Brzezinski's Obama came out of nowhere. But we said, look who his biggest donations are from. and we said this on the show, go back to the archives, Goldman Sachs and British Petroleum. Let's get into geopolitics. The new failed states index report is out. More on that from wikinews.org, and I believe topping the list of failed states is Somalia. We also have a showdown in the Red Sea. Washington's blog covering the story, the U.S. sending 11 warships to confront Iran. We also have more from all around the world. Haaretz, I believe, reporting it. Armada of U.S. real warships head for Iran. More than 12 U.S. and Israeli warships, including an aircraft carrier, passed through the Suez Canal on Friday and are headed for the Red Sea. According to eyewitnesses, the U.S. battleships were the largest to have crossed the canal in many years, reported the London-based newspaper Al-Quds Al-Arabiya on Saturday. Haaretz reported Egyptian opposition. But what are you going to do? You're going to oppose the U.S. real war machine? If you try and stop it, they'll just pull a false flag, provocation, war-starting event, like they've done all throughout, again, modern history. So we have that. We have Azam the American warning of new terror attacks. That's Adam Gadon. More on that from NationalTerrorAlert.com, which I get all the best threataganda, war on terranoia news. Iran executes insurgent leader Righi, R-I-G-I. He was, of course, accused of having ties to Western intelligence outfits. Again, U.S. real. And lastly, Kevin Rudd stepped down as Prime Minister of Australia. I believe Greg Nicoletos of We the People Will Not Be Chip.com and WakeUp.tv noted they got rid of the male fake and now have a female fake, but again, the empire rolls on. On our history mystery notes, just a few, but firstly, from the Associated Press, CIA opens up about disastrous 1952 mission inside China. Detail by painful detail, the CIA is coming to grips with one of the most devastating episodes in its history, a botched cloak and dagger flight into China that stole two decades of freedom from a pair of fresh-faced American operatives and cost the lives of their two pilots. In opening up about the 1952 debacle, the CIA is finding ways to use it as a teaching tool. Mistakes of the past can serve as cautionary tales for today's spooks and paramilitary officers taking on Al-Qaeda and other bullshit terrorist targets. Let's just cut to the chase. Nixon mauled North Korea nuclear strike in 1969. That's from the AFP. And on a little history mystery science note from, again, AP News, new hominid discovery moves back the date of walking upright. And now on to the tabloid media memes from the Washington Post. This just in, George Clooney joins the Council on Foreign Relations. Surprise, surprise. You know, and it seems like we've reported that story before, so I feel like he was already kind of an honorarium to the roundtable group. Of course, investigated and put into the book Tragedy and Hope by Bill Clinton's mentor, Carol Quigley, said his only objections were the fact that they want to keep their world government plans secret. But here it is. It's got to be true. Meet the newest member of the Council on Foreign Relations, George Clooney. The Oscar winner has been granted life membership in the prestigious think tank. Charlie Rose and New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof nominated him. CFR's vice president, Lisa Shields, cited the actor's advocacy on the Darfur crisis and the importance of non-traditional forces, rather voices, in foreign policy. Michael Douglas, Warren Beatty are also lifetime members, and Angelina Jolie scored a term memberships set aside for junior wonks in 2007. In a statement via CFR, Clooney said, "I'm honored to have been nominated, and I hear the initiation ritual is wild." It's all so funny, the fact that our misleaders actually involve themselves, either wittingly or unwittingly, in occult-based organizations. These are the sinister forces that we discuss and reference so many times on the show. That George Clooney joining the CFR story I first saw from Voltairenet.org. Twilight star Robert Pattinson related to Vlad the Impaler. That's from the New York Daily News, again, in tabloid rags. But this gets into the story, and I believe it even goes in to talk about how Robert Pattinson, star of Twilight, related to Vlad the Impaler, but so is Bush and Cheney, and they're related to Obama, and Prince Harry, and Prince William, and they're all a big, happy, blue blood, elite bloodline. Seinfeld rails against Gaga's less-than-ladylike behavior. The amazing investigations into the occult symbolism going on in a lot of pop culture. Of course, we always reference VigilantCitizen.com. A crazy old Mickey Mouse cartoon has the Huffington Post asking if Mickey Mouse was a drug dealer. You got to look at the frames from the comic book. That reminds me of the big controversy, moral panic years ago about Mighty Mouse sniffing some powder out of a flower that gave him super power. I like that. Sniffing powder out of a flower to get more power. And it was a big, huge thing, and the church was all rabble-rabbled about it. And again, that was all the stuff about media panic growing up in the church, that it was always rock and roll's bad and movies are terrible and all this stuff that only made me want to get interested in it. But anyway, FEMA and DHS back the new Disaster Hero game. More on that from GamePolitics.com. Of course, if you have Guitar Hero, why not have, you know, FEMA Hero? Where we can show you how to lock down cities and towns and deny care and basic human and civil rights. But over to the news world. Increasingly, nonprofits fill a need for investigative reporting. That's essentially outsourcing investigative reporting now. And our last note on media memes, I almost posted up by itself when I was trying to think of what would be a nice big kind of special episode 175 if we maybe just went over a couple of stories in really great detail. But I guess I'm not there yet, and we still just like to do the massive data mining. And I think, again, that's why folks like the site and show, is because it has the mass amounts of info, and you can go dive in deeper later on your own. And then again, you have to come back to the cave and tell us all about it, though. But the Illuminati psyop of the Orson Welles War of the Worlds broadcast, Henry Mako, has a new article on this, and of course its connections to the Princeton Radio Project. You may recall we briefly touched on this subject when we interviewed Dr. Leonard Horowitz at the recent conspiracy conference. Of course, top of the page, you can hit all our exclusive coverage, all those interviews from ConspiracyCon with Dr. Leonard Horowitz and Michael Tesserian and Tex Mars and Jordan Maxwell and tons of other folks. And again, that's the kind of topics I think that are more up my alley. And I do wonder, and I've talked about this with folks, that possibly keeping up this kind of rate of production in the current way that I'm doing it, I may totally burn out. And maybe if and when we reach that point, however we learn how to grow and spread this media monarchy umbrella, Whether that would mean getting other folks involved as editors, which I would like to do. If there's a certain area you're most interested in and you could post something once a week, whether it was an article with a list of headlines or anything, send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. That's how we could grow this, get more people working on the other sites, foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com. And then maybe I would just focus on media, memes, pop a culture, if you will. But a few more things to go down this 624 news purge. A little bit of murder and mayhem from Copycat Effect going into the twilight language of the recent Del Taco hit and making the connections with Luby's Cafe and all of the other Copycat Effect cluster mass murder contagion stories. We also have three arrested in a DC murder for hire case. But on to Obamasiah and his apostles of war. Kagan calls Israeli judge, who some refer to this activist judge as Judge Dredd, Kagan calls her, or rather him, my judicial hero. We also have Blagojevich on tape. Of course, his corruption trial going on. No one really paying attention to this. But we now have Blago on tape saying, get Obama to fundraise from Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. Again, guys intimately connected to the whole structure. The roundtable structure. Gates and all his Planned Parenthood, eugenics, seed vault, flying syringes, depopulation. Warren Buffett. Same thing. This corruption trial of the Chicago machine going on, but again, we're too busy watching football with a fake catharsis. We'll get into that a little bit more a little bit later. But boy, do we have an Oregon oddity for you, my friends. From the Washington Post, as well as shtfplan.com. That's, of course, shit hitting the fan plan. Oregon District Attorney may prosecute Al Gore for sexual assault. I believe the story goes back to 2006. Al Gore was in Portland. He was getting a massage. Apparently, there was some kind of sexual advances. Something happened. I haven't read into all the ugly details of the story. Apparently, she kept some clothing as some bit of evidence, which, of course, instantly reminds you of Lewinsky. But this all comes on the heels of Al and Tipper Gore divorcing after, I think, 30 or 40 years of marriage. And it comes back to the land of the sex scandal, Portland, Oregon. Of course, we have Bob Packwood and our own recent scandals involving Mayor Sam Adams. But the other note is that the National Enquirer said it decided not to pay for this Gore sex story interview. They said no money changed hands. They didn't want any money to change hands because then that would let folks be able to point a finger and say this is just a put up, you know, pay off, you know, money sensationalist piece. But it's interesting to note, and we'll do it quickly, that sometimes outlets like the National Enquirer are outside of the sort of mainline, mainstream media structure. Yeah, they're stupid rags 95% of the time, but they do break important stories. Now, a lot of times it is of a tabloid sex nature, because that's what sells. But it's also a great way to show the hypocrisy of our moralistic misleaders. They did the John Edwards story. And you also notice, too, that they don't seem to get sued all that often. So, my friends, that was the massive June 24th news purge, War Pigs. And we're now going to get into, quickly, our police state updates. Mobs, ads, and a state of emergency. As we get adjusted. police state updates. We start off with a video that you have to check out for yourself. There's nothing really to play but except the sounds of screaming fools burning their own city because their idiotic sports team was able to shove a ball into a hoop more than some other stupid sports team was. Sorry. As longtime listeners probably know, I'm a longtime sports hater. Of course, someone like myself was a favorite target of some of the bigger jocks at school. I was never beat up. It came close a lot of times. But God, if you don't like sports and your hair's kind of long, you must be a fag. And again, nothing against you if you play sports. It's just the overall bread and circus of the whole operation that I abhor. So the Lakers won the championship, basketball, whatever. And fools went out Woodstock 99 style because it's a lot of the same Mookie type folks. But again, shit hits the fan plan, covering what an out-of-control mob looks like. But further down the police state updates, Pentagon revives Rumsfeld-era domestic spying unit. More on that from Raw Story. And we've said it time and time again. The names change, they push it down, it's whack-a-mole, it pops up somewhere else. U.S. Predator drones to surveil Mexican border as the border wars definitely heat up. California license plates might go digital and show advertisements. Minority Report coming more and more true every single day. New Jersey naval base was under lockdown in Lakehurst. New York City car bomb suspect Faisal Shahzad has pled guilty. The Manchurian candidate calls it war. Chester, Pennsylvania, placed under a state of emergency. More on that from DelcoTimes.com. Pennsylvania town simulates aerosolized anthrax attack. That is from BioPrepWatch.com. The TSA exercise joined in with Ohio and West Virginia first responders. And we have, from the Las Vegas Institute for Security Studies, the 7 signs of terrorism. Again, from NationalTerrorAlert.com. And we thought about playing the clip for that, but again, this is one of those things that kind of seems like I've played that before. That gets difficult to track. Sometimes and that's what it's all about, you know. And these guys' line of work, they have to, you know, use a lot of repetition to catapult the propaganda. Supreme Court upholds law against advising terrorists. More on that from Los Angeles Times. New York Port Authority warned of alleged terror threat. That was late last night. Again, NationalTerrorAlert.com. But we got the update from the New York Post. NYPD launches ambitious downtown surveillance camera plan. Network of surveillance cameras to combat terrorism and detect suspicious behavior in lower and midtown Manhattan. Of course, this all fronted out by Raymond Kelly, head of NYPD. Arrest made after car with weapons and gasoline found near the G20 summit, but that was just the beginning, and that was from Fox News. But we also have another update, as again, the G8, the G20 starts to kick into gear. We've been covering over the last several weeks the buildup, the police state buildup for our elites and frontmen and misleaders. The drills, the military, private military industrial complex infesting every area of Toronto in the weeks and months leading up to this very weekend. As again, a lot of things all kind of swirl around at the same time. We always kind of watch warily when there's a weekend that seems to have a solstice, which of course, you know, pagan numerology. These guys are all, essentially, they love the occult. A lot of them won't make a move without consulting their occultants, if you will. The World Cup, the G20, the solstice, We now have U.S.-Israeli warships steaming ahead. But the AFP reports Toronto turned into fortress for G20 summits. Thousands of Canadian police threw a tight security net over eastern Ontario province Thursday as world leaders began arriving for key summits focused on economic recovery and development. That's what they tell you. But then it gets even worse. This morning, again from Kurt Nemo, writing that Dan Dix of PressForTruth.ca reported this morning that Charlie Veach of the Love Police was arrested yesterday in Toronto for refusing to cooperate with the Stasi. Charlie Veach produces, of course, videos of his confrontations with government officials and police. He was on Alex Jones' show in May, but he was just on the most recent episode of the Corbett Report, and we're going to get into that. But now Charlie Veach got arrested. We also, I believe, have We Are Change founder Luke Radowski and some of his mates denied entry into Canada, period, trying to get in from Buffalo, New York. And the lockdown is on. The last one of these meetings, I believe, or at least the one we saw closest, was in Pennsylvania, where they, of course, were using all those weapons that you always thought were just for those dark terrorists over in some land over there. But no, now they're for you. And we always have to watch out for provocateur protests where spooks, feds, patsies, triple agents, whatever, provocateur violence to get the police crackdown, demonizing any kind of dissent in the eyes of the fools glued to the 24/7 news blather. So we watch for false flag agent provocateur events during these kind of protests. And again, everything's a powder keg. Everything's a tinderbox looking for a spark. Our last police day note. Another, I believe this is the latest article up on Tarpley.net on Obama's strategy for the G20 would be keeping toxic derivatives in charge of the world economy. And those were our police state updates, but again, you see, more and more and more, it's all related. It's all connected. The G20, the money, the police state, the sound wave cannons, the internet bills, the banksters, the spills, the greenwash, all of it, all connected. We should now tell you, my friends, that we are into hour number two of episode 175. From MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 25th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and simulcast live on zeropointradio.com. on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, and we are streaming live video on ustream.tv/mediamonarchy. And we mentioned the greenwashing and the spills. And here we are. I believe my man Murphy noted, again, you can find me and all kinds of other folks, friends, family, fans of the page. It's a big mess of people on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. That this is day 66 of the Gulf oil spill. I suppose something we'll also mention here right at the outset before we get into the spills that I watched the amazing predictive programming film known as Knowing last night. Alex Proyas is a good director. Kind of just felt like a video game. It had some amazing sequences, but again, yeah, the amazing sequences all look like the narrative sequences in video games. But it became notable recently, as it came out last year, that basically as he's starting to go through the numerology, discovered in a time capsule and yada yada with the family and the kids and the numbers, that there's a Gulf oil spill and a rig fire in the Gulf of Mexico as he's starting to watch these events happen as he's now being shown on this piece of paper. So again, ultimately, spoiler alert, it's pretty much space angels that come down to get his kid as the chosen one. I don't know if that's the Nephilim or what have you, but it basically plops him back down and starts over on a Eden, if you will. I guess saying, you know, don't worry that this planet is screwed and there's nothing we could absolutely do about it unless, you know, we take away everything and depopulate. But don't worry, we'll just get to start over. In hell, maybe that's true. But maybe that's not for us to get into right now. BioWars Enviro Health Updates, Spill, SIGs, and Eugenics. I believe this came out late last Friday, and it was something we didn't cover, but it's still pertinent. 10 stories in the news that the BP oil spill is overshadowing. The mainstream media running 24-hour news cycle focused purely on the BP oil spill, a disaster, as has been shown, that is being intentionally hyped in order to sell cap-and-trade legislation and moves to nationalize big business. Now, having said that, we will say that this is an utter catastrophe, that we haven't even seen how disgusting it is. But as we have always seen, and hopefully, again, folks are rubbing their eyes and starting to realize that, hey, all these guys who pose as our saviors with all these great solutions, they cause the problems in the first place. But let's run down 10 stories being overlooked. Israeli nuclear submarines positioned close to Iran, with a link to the Times Online. More Iran war propaganda with links to the AFP. The continuing economic slide with more from the Associated Press. And all around the web on a new economic world order. The greatest bankster heist in history is all still spilling around all around us. Number four is the FCC ready to restrict the internet, with links all around the documentation. Obama Blagojevich story. More details emerging. Again from Sun Times, where we noted Blago on tape, get Obama to fundraise from Buffett and Gates. We've also must note here that prosecutors are seeking a gag order to keep the ex-governor and his lawyers from making public comments. There is the UN Small Arms Treaty. Again, the blue helmets will come. Mexican riots in LA, land given over to Mexico. Again, this coming into the resource wars and the coming race wars, again, being engineered on purpose. Obama plans sneaking through carbon tax by stealth, again, using the backdrop of the oil spill. Again, even if you believe in man-made global warming, what is paying carbon indulgences to Gore and Goldman Sachs and the Rothschilds and JP Morgan going to do about it? The Afghana treasure as war propaganda story. And the free speech gag bill moving forward in the House. H.R. 5175, the so-called Disclose Act. With more on that from Politico and Campaign for Liberty. But our last few Gulf oil spill notes, of course. As the oil was spewing, BP chief went to go see his yacht race in the UK, and that became a big story. But again, we're focusing on the front men. Get mad at this guy who went to a boat race. He's just an elite bastard. He's just doing what he knows how to do. But he's the front man. He'll take the blame, but he's got the golden parachute. And ultimately, these things are all about serving the greater agenda. And the gangsters aren't going to do anything to call their whole shell game into question. As long as you can keep fooling all the suckers, all the gangsters make pretty good business. Wayne Mattson reporting from oilprice.com as well, cross-posted on Zero Hedge, that the Obama administration knew about Deepwater Horizon 35,000-foot wellbore, and they green-lighted and fast-tracked the project. Just a couple of days ago, even more oil started to gush after another problem with another cap. But I believe the latest and last that we have on the Gulf oil spill is that buried in an article on Gulf of Mexico scenarios and predictions, Joel Achenbach of the Washington Post quotes Matthew Simmons, founder and chairman emeritus of Simmons & Company International. In response to a tropical storm brewing in the Caribbean, Simmons says, quote, "We're going to have to evacuate the Gulf states. Can you imagine evacuating 20 million people? This is 80 times worse than I thought." We also have more coming from AccuWeather forecasters talking about storms rolling into the Gulf. And oil in the Gulf not only contains a massive amount of methane, but also deadly hydrogen sulfide, benzene, and methylene chloride. BP admits methane makes up about 40% of the leaking crude by mass. However, what we want to note here is that Matthew Simmons is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and subscribes to the Club of Rome's Limits to Growth propaganda. He's also a peak oil proponent, scarcity theory, even though many scientists now believe oil could be abiotic, but we can't get into all of that right now. But basically what we're saying is when an oily insider and CFR member says they're going to have to evacuate the Gulf Coast, we may want to pay attention to that. I believe it came up in conversation just the other day with some folks at work. And things still keep spilling out about Katrina. Is that unfortunately on a number of levels? The catastrophic catalyzing events of Hurricane Katrina were a test run, a test tube, a petri dish run for police state run amok of what most likely would really happen in the event of the shit hitting the fan. They get us to be against the cops, and the protesters fight the cops, and it's all about that. I kind of think ultimately, if and when we hit those kind of scenarios, and unfortunately, there seems to be no doubt, I guess it just remains to be seen how massive, and if we can incite the revelation to possibly stop it, that we could all just say no and just don't look and take our money out of these banks, make them destruct, and take care of each other. That may all really have to come very soon, but maybe it also won't really come until we absolutely have to do it. But unfortunately, I think if we have these kind of moments, you're going to see most of the police go AWOL because they're going to want to take care of their own families. So then you're going to have a real breakdown when the mobs can really run amok unfettered. And that's when it'll really go crazy, and that's again going to give the capital, it's going to give the impetus to bring in, what, blue helmets, foreign troops, private military contractors, none of which will really have any problem taking you out. Remember those clips from Katrina, asking cops if they were going to shoot American citizens. They said they would. They didn't want to think about it. But they're going to do their job. On down the EnviroHealth list, we have more bad news on cigarettes. CDC finds higher level of cancer-causing chemicals from United States brand cigarettes. AllGov.com and others asking the question if it's time to limit nicotine levels in cigarettes. And we also have a new cigarette tax hike in New York State, meaning $10 plus packs of cigarettes. Doctors' role in drug studies criticized. That's from JSOnline.com. Again, they're on the payroll. We don't test our drugs. We shove them out. You're the guinea pig. They'll make shit tons of money anyway, even if they do have to recall it later. Merck, Vioxx, whatever. Huffington Post asking if your DNA is dangerous to your health. Again, greasing the skids, all setting us up for the brave new world order where we'll all be engineered in a test tube and we'll be alphas and betas. And we'll put all those other barbarians out on the reservation. That does bring to mind, I don't think I have it linked up anywhere, but it's the cover story on the latest issue of Wired, and that's Sergey Brin, I think one of the founders of Google, I think has a high probability in his DNA scheme to get Parkinson's disease, I believe, and now fighting to basically stop that. So, is your DNA dangerous to your health? TheCuttingEdgeNews.com has the latest article from Edwin Black, author of IBM and the Holocaust.com. Mendoza legislation nudges California back to eugenics. Mendoza being the one putting up the legislation AB 2072 in California. Basically, they want all your DNA. They want to test everything to see that you're having tomorrow's children. Indian children blinded and crippled by fluoride in water. Now, this story sources back to InfoWars, and I know I have a lot of friends who, as soon as they see if that's where it comes from, oh, that's bullshit. I don't believe anything from them. But they provide the links to the Indian press getting into the blinding and crippling and otherwise general malaise brought on by fluoride. And again, this is one of the numerous stories that, again, I think the alternative media and the web and that 9/11 truth spawned. Food truth, 7/7 truth, surveillance truth, fluoride truth, vaccine truth, all of it. And again, we're in, I think, this window where people are waking up, but possibly as the window is going to slam down on some part of their body. Our last EnviroHealth note from Thomas Moore, writing on why fun is a serious issue. And I thank my man Zach for sending me that link. And again, that's something we can't forget. And hopefully you guys don't forget. And yes, I spend a hell of a lot of time writing and researching and editing and doing the media monarchy and running the monarchy kingdom. But I try and have fun still, and that is important. And sometimes we do just have to laugh at a lot of this to stop ourselves from crying about all of it. But having said that, we're probably going to have to pick up the pace a little bit. Our latest 9/11 updates posting goes over feds and the freedom of information, but it is also the 4,000th post on MediaMonarchy.com. As ridiculous as that may sound, it's true. 9/11 updates, feds, FOIA, and my 4,000th post. We've, of course, been running MediaMonarchy.com since 9/11/05. We've been on the air since October 2006. And we always come back to 9/11 truth being one of our core areas. Again, I wanted to know what the video of the plane hitting the Pentagon looked like. And here I am now, 9 years later. Still, we're all trying to find out the answer to not just that, but the myriad of other questions. But first, from the New York Times, judge dismisses many claims in 9/11 lawsuits. A federal judge in Manhattan who was criticized by families of victims of 9/11 for taking too long to decide motions in lawsuits they had filed has handed down a ruling dismissing claims made against many of the defendants. That would, of course, be the fundraising fronts and others. The judge, George B. Daniels of Federal District Court, has overseen a group of lawsuits filed in the wake of the attacks. The suits sought to hold charities, financial institutions, and individuals responsible for providing money and other support to al-Qaeda. Politico reporting, chances dim for a swift 9/11 decision, Obama, Holder, and KSM. We have to sadly note from 911truth.org that Bill Christensen, former senior analyst for the Central Intelligence Agency, who became a ardent supporter of 911 Truth, died June 13th, 2010, due to a rapidly advancing neurological disease which he had contracted 3 months earlier. We got a little bit of decent coverage for just a brief moment. As 9/11 blogger notes in Chris Matthew MSNBC recent smear piece, Rise of the New Right. But we've also got more FOIAs from History Commons. NSA's 9/11 retrospective, where the poster on HistoryCommons.org filed a new FOIA request. It's for the NSA's 9/11 retrospective, which collected communication intercepts relevant to the 9/11 plot. The request is also for the addendum to the retrospective, which was the subject of an earlier post on History Commons. The NSA has previously turned down a couple of FOIA requests, and we don't expect much, but if you don't take a shot, you don't score a goal. A list of successful FOIA requests can be found, and unsuccessful ones can be found on the links provided. And again, as we always mention, HistoryCommons.org and the complete 9/11 timeline is indispensable. Global Research has a new article from Professor David Ray Griffin on, again, all that swirls around us. Did 9/11 justify the war in Afghanistan, using the McChrystal moment to raise a forbidden question? Another one from 9/11 blogger, actions and inactions of the commander in charge of the U.S. air defense failure on 9/11. That would be General Ralph Eberhardt, the commander-in-chief of NORAD, the military organization responsible for defending U.S. airspace when 9/11 occurred. Considering that NORAD failed to intercept any one of the four aircraft targeted in the attacks and successfully defend New York and Washington, one would reasonably expect Eberhardt to have been somehow held to account, and yet that did not happen. Amazing work being done by the folks connected to 9/11 blogger and History Commons, putting together again the people's history, the open source intelligence history of the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. And we covered this last week. The recent FOIA from the head of Smart CEO discovering that information pertaining to the insider trading leading up to 9/11, all that information's been destroyed. We, of course, reported several months prior even to that the SEC had said, oh, they investigated themselves and nobody did any of that pre-9/11 insider trading. However, let's go to a man who never minces words, MaxKaiser.com, on the bin Laden trades and the insider trading of 9/11.
So I've been following this this entire 10-year period basically focused on one thing and one thing only. The actions, the trading of put options on the airline stocks immediately preceding the attacks of 9/11. The volume on those put options was 25 times greater than normal volume, and the imbalance of puts to calls was 80% for puts, 20% for calls, which is a very high concentration of negative bets on 25 times normal volume. Usually, this is exactly what you see right before an announcement of a takeover, and the options market reflects inside information. When regulators try to figure out who is trading on inside information, they look at the options market. There's a thing on Wall Street called Stockwatch. It's a group, it's like a little sleuth group on Wall Street looking for insider trading. And they look at the options, they look at volume, and they look at price. And when you see 25 times normal volume and huge prices and spike in price and huge imbalances of put to call ratio, this is usually a telltale sign of insider trading. So that we saw the exact same thing leading up to the 9/11 attacks on the airline stocks that all made millions and millions of dollars in profits based on insider information on those attacks. Now, we have a little update. David Callahan, who's the executive director of Smart CEO Magazine, which I believe is actually published somewhere around Baltimore, Maryland, where the former headquarters of Alex Brown & Son, which was taken over by Deutsche Bank, the brokerage firm that handled these option trades, he has submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the SEC regarding the 9/11, the pre-9/11 put options. And the letter that he got back was startling, and he writes about it in the August edition of Smart CEO Magazine. Basically, what he was told was that all that information has been destroyed.
The SEC wrote back to him and said that the government destroyed those documents.
Right.
That relates to those pre-9/11 put options in American Airlines and United. It was just those two airlines that had massive shorts on them.
That's right.
Or puts, as they call them.
Right. That's right. And the information was destroyed. And, you know, this is unusual to say the least. It wasn't as though they had some other alternative explanation for the huge anomalies in the option market, like there was some kind of hedging strategy being put on.
Well, the 9/11 Commission report says, oh, we looked into this. They do mention it in the 9/11 Commission report. And they say, we looked into it. It was, they reckon the extreme options were abnormal. And remember, United and American do have an option record going back decades. So they were able to see it was a drastic anomaly. And they blame it on a newsletter that recommended people short these two stocks. And they said it was a legitimate firm through which the bets were placed, meaning Alex Brown. They failed to mention in the 9/11 Commission report that Alex Brown had been run for several decades by the number three man at the CIA, Buzzy Krongard, who had moved to the CIA, under George Bush.
That's right. He was in the CIA office, moving from Alex Brown to the CIA. He was deputy director under George Tenet. And there's tremendous overlap between we know that a lot of the hedge funds that buy U.S. government bonds to help to support the U.S. government bond market are hedge funds that are registered in the Cayman Islands. And there's a lot of study in terms of and research in terms of the owners and the backers of these hedge funds being U.S. intelligence agencies that are buying these bonds to help support the bond market. So the markets and the intelligence services and Alex Brown in Baltimore, Maryland, which is right near Washington, D.C., George Tenet, Buzzy Krongard, there's tremendous overlap going there. Now, my feeling has always been from really the day after 9/11 is that there was a sufficient amount of information circulating on the desks and in the research notes of these brokers and insiders enough to commit millions in buying these put options, speculating on the collapse in a sufficient amount of time that would have warranted, considering these are intelligence officials, a closer examination of what was happening. And in my opinion, had the motive to protect people been greater than the motive to profit from this inside information, those attacks would have never happened.
MaxKaiser.com on the Bin Laden trades, the insider trading, of course, connected to Buzzy Krongard of the CIA. Of course, CIA, the old boys, intimately connected to drug running and money laundering and Wall Street chicanery. But our last 9/11 update from the Telegraph: remains of 72 people found at World Trade Center site. New York City officials say a renewed search this year of debris in and around the World Trade Center site has recovered 72 humans. The sifting of more than 80 cubic yards of debris recovered from Ground Zero and underneath roads around Lower Manhattan began in April, as we reported, and ended Friday, June 25th, as we speak. The greatest number of remains, 37, were found from material underneath West Street, a highway on the west side of Ground Zero. The new debris was uncovered as construction work made new parts of the site accessible. The city began a renewed search for the human remains in 06. Again, as we reported for you on MediaMonarchy.com, more than 1,800 remains have been found. Some have been matched to previously unidentified 9/11 victims. That's why we do 9/11 updates every week, because there is constant information coming out connected to the catalyzing catastrophic events, the blank check that has led to everything that's still going on all around us. But we want to mention now, as we close up with everything from MediaMonarchy.com, and we're going to get into all the latest from Cyberspace War and Food World Order, we first want to note a few other things in the alternative media world. I just published yesterday the third installment of the Media Monarchy mixtape, this time for the summer solstice. We keep it together, the better the weather, and we like it that way. This hour-long mixtape features some new and old favorites of mine from Yancey of Sigur Rós, Queen, She and Him, Sloan, NXS, The Jam, Hefner, Gene, Gil Scott-Heron, Arab Strap, and tons more. Fast fun for the summer sun. And can't all be news and politics all the time. As you may know, I'm a radio guy from back east, music director at a non-commercial 950-watt radio station for many years. During that, concurrently to that, I started to investigate 9/11. And then when I moved out west, I moved the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups to the front, and I still love music and media and film and all those things. So that's our third mixtape, and again, we noted on there, I never really meant them to be a seasonal thing. Our first mixtape came out right around Christmas, and that was my end-of-the-decade favorites. And, of course, Christmas right around the solstice, all the pagan holidays. Then mixtape number two for spring was out on the spring equinox, and now this one out right around the summer solstice. No, I haven't gone all occulty. It just kind of happened that way. And, again, I'll try and maybe step up the production of the mixtapes, because hopefully you guys enjoy them as half as much as I do. We also, again, want to mention the latest episode of The New World Next Week for June 24th. It's the 35th episode of The New World Next Week. McChrystal out, Mon Satan, and Napolitano versus Franklin. Of course, McChrystal out. We have already covered in the first hour for you on this episode 175 of MediaMonarchy.com. But Monsanto and Napolitano, we're going to get into on foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com, respectively. And something I'll just briefly throw out, because I can't keep it quiet anymore. It's not perfect yet, but we've been working on a New World Next Week dedicated site. And we're starting it out on blip.tv. So you can check out newworldnextweek.blip.tv. We've got our most recent, I believe, five or so videos up there. And they provide a feed, an iTunes feed, to where you can download the videos of the New World Next Week. They're in super high quality right now. If you subscribe, you're going to get the full high-quality AVIs straight from CorbettReport.com, and they run a few hundred megs. I realize maybe not everybody wants that coming down their pod catcher. So again, we're still working out the kinks, but New World Next Week, .blip.tv is there as well, NewWorldNextWeek.com. So having mentioned that and mentioned my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, the latest episode, 134, Lessons in Resistance, Culture Jamming. There's only one way to get people out of the Matrix. You got to reach in and pull them out. But how best to do it? This week, We try and learn from the best, including the aforementioned arrested in Toronto outside G20, Charlie Veitch of the Love Police, cveitch.org, V-E-I-T-C-H. And also Bruno Brewweiler is also on this episode 134 of CorbettReport.com. Again, very, very timely. James Corbett has a great video Skype interview with Charlie Veitch. You can check that out in its entirety on youtube.com/CorbettReport. As well, the latest videos, the Sunday update from this past Sunday, June 20th, Climate Consensus, Carbon Controls, and Truther Convicted. That would be the aforementioned Bruno Brewweiler of We Are Change LA. And of course, the ongoing ClimateGate.tv. But we've got to mention a must-see and must-share new article and video from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, The Meaning of Austerity. His latest viral video and article, I believe at last glance when I looked at it yesterday, has 15,000+ views on youtube.com/CorbettReport, and it's been reposted all around the web, InfoWars, Global Research, everywhere. So we owe it to ourselves and to James to take a look at this. And what we'll mention, and what I told James myself, this word, austerity, was the word I first heard when the new financial world order was beginning tangibly around us in the fall of 2008. That again, Webster Tarpley was the first person I heard back in 2008 using this word austerity, saying, now watch out, they're going to bring austerity measures in. And we've seen now this word come in apropos of nothing. And again, the mainstream media doesn't explain it to you. They don't tell you anything about it. It's just there and you're supposed to take it. But let's just get the basic dictionary definition that in economics, austerity is when a government reduces its spending and/or increases user fees and taxes to pay back creditors. Austerity is usually required when a government's fiscal deficit spending is believed to be unsustainable. Now, of course, our international central banksters, it's all unsustainable. It's all zeros and ones. We give them a dollar and they loan out 10. They get rich, they throw us the crumbs. It's a boom and bust system that they've all been behind for quite some time. It's like the aforementioned House of Rothschild. But let's get into CorbettReports.com. CorbettReport.com's meaning of austerity.
It's an old trick to couch a painful reality inside of a flowery platitude. We hear it all the time in our daily lives, and for the most part, we know how to read between the lines when someone tries to do it to us. When your doctor tells you that this will only hurt a bit, you know enough to brace yourself for a painful procedure. When your boss tells you that he has an exciting new project for you to work on, you know you're about to get saddled with a job that no one else wants to do. When a salesman tells you that a used car is a fixer-upper, you know that you're looking at a lemon. Similarly, when the IMF tells a nation that they need to implement austerity in order to get themselves out of a financial crisis, here too lies a gaping chasm between the language and the reality. Austerity is one of those Orwellian terms that has been injected into our political discourse precisely because it is a nice-sounding word for a very painful reality. Austerity implies discipline, self-restraint, even nobility. Austerity is prudent. Austerity is modest. Austerity is a virtue. It is an end in itself. If the IMF or the European Central Bank come to the people of a collapsing European nation and tell them to sacrifice their pensions and their savings and their very standard of living, all for a debt that their government has fraudulently racked up in their name, no one would go for it, and rightly so. But tell those same people that they need to implement austerity measures in order to get back on their feet economically, and many will be willing to live in the harshest of conditions, content to put up with the dismantling of their nation itself, in the vain hope that by giving more power to the international financial institutions, they can somehow avoid economic collapse. The trick, of course, is that reality is completely the opposite. like the doctor giving you false assurances that this will only hurt a bit. The economic amputation that the bankers have in store for the once proud nations of the industrialized world will be excruciating. Just ask anyone in the third world. They should know. They've been going through these austerity plans for decades. Ask the people of Ethiopia if the IMF World Bank economic therapy of the 1990s worked in their nation's favor. Ask them about the fire sale of state assets, public utilities, farms, and factories for pennies on the dollar to multinational corporations. Ask them how USAID helped to dump surplus genetically engineered crops that couldn't be sold in Europe on poor African nations as charitable food aid. The extent of the horrors inflicted on Ethiopia by the international financiers almost beggars description. The banksters weren't content to carve the country into pieces and sell the scraps to their big business cronies. They then had the audacity to steal the very food off the poor farmers' tables and replace it with GM Frankenfoods that the rest of the world wouldn't even touch. This is the real face of austerity. It is nothing less than economic slavery to an elite group of banksters who have created their own fiat wealth out of thin air. Nor is Ethiopia the only example of this procedure. Quite the contrary. A similar process has played itself out in almost every country that the international finance oligarchs have tried to set straight with their procedures that will only hurt a little. In Brazil, IMF reforms actually altered the nature of the Brazilian constitution, halting transfers of federal funds to state governments so that those funds could be used to pay the bankers their pound of flesh. The IMF structural adjustment program in Peru devastated the local agricultural economy and made illegal coca production the only viable way for many farmers to make a living. From the first IMF-sponsored economic reform package in Peru in 1978 to the second round of IMF reforms in the early 90s, coca production increased over 400%. A $4.8 billion IMF loan to Russia in the late 90s never even made it into Russian coffers, with billions being deposited directly into offshore bank accounts connected to mobsters, politicians, and banksters. Despite the fact that the Russian people did not see a single ruble of the siphoned money, they were still responsible for paying it back to the international bankers who were kind enough to lend it to them at interest. Time and time again, in country after country, in every corner of the globe, IMF loans spell disaster for the people who are left holding the bag.
The meaning of austerity, the latest viral video meme, well-timed, well-needed, necessary, CorbettReport.com. We now jump to one of my other favorite alternative news sources. That's my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. His latest episode, Creating a New World Without Us. And all the archives available from ZeroPointRadio.com. And what we want to quickly note is that it's already the last Friday of the month. And it's the second live show from Clyde Lewis, returning to a monthly live event at the Kenton Masonic Lodge on North Denver Avenue in downtown Portland, Oregon. Tonight's show, Roswell and the Black Sun Covenant. The Nazi military-industrial complex connections will be fully delved into at the Roswell show. And if you can't be there, you can go to groundzeromedia.org or zeropointradio.com, and you can buy a pass and listen to the event live as it happens. That's also a way, great way to stay informed, and also a great way to support alternative media, such as zeropointradio.com and groundzeromedia.org, as well as my man Clyde Lewis, who needs help with his medical bills. Now we're going to move to cyberspacewar.com. White House prepping national internet identity authentication plan. This from fiercegovernment.com. The White House plans to reveal today, June 25th, a strategy for verifying the online identity of internet users, said cyber czar, ex-Microsoft Bush crony Howard Schmidt, speaking June 22nd at a District of Criminals conference. I want to make sure that the computer on the other end knows that it's me, that it's interacting with. He told the audience, of the Symantec Government Symposium 2010. To that end, the White House will unveil a strategy for public comment called the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. This strategy draws on federal efforts such as Homeland Security Presidential Directive Number 12, the Bushy 2004 presidential mandate that federal employees carry a standardized identity card. HSPD 12 implementation strategy ended up giving federal employees a smart card containing a chip holding simple biometric information. Schmidt said we need to figure out how we get those things to work at the national level. Let's dive into a little bit more on the National Internet Identity Authentication Plan.
The White House is ready to make public its plan to secure online transactions. As Federal News Radio has been telling you, Howard Schmidt, the White House's cybersecurity coordinator, has been leading this effort that would cut across the public and private sectors. Schmidt says the administration will release the draft plan this Friday. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller joins us with a sneak peek at the initial strategy. Good morning, Jason. Great to have you on.
Good morning, Tom and Amy.
And so what will the draft strategy address?
Well, the strategy actually has changed its name over the course of the development. Right now it's called the National Strategy for Trusted Identity in Cyberspace, the NSTIC, which is a great, another acronym from the government. But what this strategy will do is come up with guidelines and actions to improve how we manage our identities. That means you, me, whoever interacts with the government and the private sector firms. Schmidt says this effort really is all about trust.
So when you look at the various identification processes to allow me to feel more confident about how I'm interacting with the organizations, individuals, or computers, I want to make sure the computer on the other end is also confident that that's me who's interacting with them. And that's one of the problems we have. Not only do we have to worry about who we're interacting with, but those on the other side, particularly we're doing business with, whether it's a business of government, business of banking, business of transportation, that those computer systems have to trust that it's really us. And with the botnets we've seen, the compromised computer systems, that's been as much of a challenge as anything else.
Now, the White House vetted the first draft internally, and then now the second draft is going to be vetted externally, and it's going to be offering goals and objectives around the laws, policies, programs that will be needed to improve the security of online identities. Schmidt says this could be from online banking or making purchases online or something as simple as sending a secure email.
We want the identity solutions to be secure and resilient. We want to make sure that they're able to withstand intrusions, that they're indeed are tested, so if a man-in-the-middle attack takes place, that we basically don't give them the ability to do something with it. That's a new way of doing business.
Quickly now, at the bottom of this post-related story from the Washington Post, government devotes more brain power and money to cybersecurity. But quickly now, as we shift into high gear in the lightning round in the last 10-plus minutes here on episode 175 from MediaMonarchy.com. We're on CyberspaceWar.com, and we've got a little Napolitano versus Franklin. U.S. must balance liberties and cybersecurity. Fighting homegrown terrorism by monitoring internet communications is a civil liberties trade-off the U.S. government must make to beef up national security, said the head of the Reichland Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano. And the AP writes, as terrorists increasingly recruit U.S. citizens, the government needs to constantly balance American civil rights and privacy, blah, 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 with the need to keep people safe, neither of which they are really concerned with. We just have to note from Benjamin Franklin that those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. And on to another bad news boogeyman. Joe, the independent Lieberman, tells the internet to just relax about the kill switch.
Let me ask you on a couple of other subjects in our final minutes here. First of all, you have an internet bill. It's been called the kill switch bill that would allow the president to seize control or shut down portions of the internet if the U.S. was under some sort of cyber attack. I don't know if you've seen the internet lately. There's a lot of people out there who think that what you are granting the president is absolute power. To shut down freedom of speech. I mean, this is just over the top.
No way. And total misinformation. I don't know whether people are intentionally peddling the misinformation. Here's the fact. Cyber war is going on in some sense right now. Our civilian infrastructure, the internet that runs the electric grid, the telecommunications grid, transportation, all the rest is constantly being probed by nation states, by some terrorist groups, by organized criminal gangs. And we need this capacity in time of war. We need the capacity for the president to say, internet service provider, we've got to disconnect the American internet from all traffic coming in from another foreign country, or we've got to put a patch on this part of it. The president will never take over, the government should never take over the internet. And listen, we've consulted, Senator Collins and I are proposing this bill, with civil liberties and privacy experts. This is a matter of national security. A cyber attack on America can do as much or more damage today by incapacitating our banks, our communications, our finance, our transportation, as a conventional war attack. And the president, in catastrophic cases, not going to do it every day, not going to take it over. So I say to my friends on the internet, relax. Take a look at the bill. And this is something that we need to protect our country. Right now, China, the government, can disconnect parts of its internet in the case of war. We need to have that here, too.
Oh, thanks, Lieberman. They all just can't wait for that I-9/11 event so they can shove an I-Patriot Act down our ports. The bad update to this, at the bottom of this Lieberman post on cyberspacewar.com, the cybersecurity bill clears Senate committee, and that's from theregister.co.uk. Quickly to the DEFCON 624, more leaks and more lawsuits, with a follow-up on something we covered last week, where Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers says that the U.S. might assassinate Julian Assange of WikiLeaks.
I think it's worth mentioning a very new and ominous development in our country. I think he would not be safe, even physically, entirely, wherever he is. We have, after all, for the first time that I ever, perhaps in any democratic country, we have a president who has announced that he feels he has the right to use special operations operatives against anyone abroad that he thinks is associated with terrorism, that he suspects of it. And that includes American citizens. One American citizen has even been named. Now, Assange is not an American citizen, but I listened to that with a special interest because I was, in fact, the subject of a White House hit squad in November on May 3rd, 1972. A dozen Cuban assets were brought up from Miami with orders, quote, quoting the prosecutor, to incapacitate Daniel Ellsberg totally on the steps of the Capitol. It so happens when I was in a rally during the Vietnam War. And I asked the prosecutor, what does that mean? Kill me? And he said, the words were to incapacitate you totally, but you should understand that these guys, meaning these CIA operatives, never use the word kill. And he thought the intent was to kill me. I actually think it was to silence me at that particular time for worries they had that I would leak President Nixon's nuclear threats, which he was making at that precise time in 1972. Now, as I look at Assange's case, their worry that he will reveal current threats, I would have to say, puts his well-being, his physical life, in some danger now. And I say that with anguish. I think it's astonishing that an American president should have put out that policy and that he's not getting any resistance from it, from Congress, the press, the courts, or anything. It's an amazing development, but I think Assange would do well to keep his whereabouts unknown.
That is someone who would know, Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers, warning WikiLeaks to watch his back. And in connection to all that, out of Australia, ABC, WikiLeaks founder drops mass spying hint as a possible hint of what the latest and greatest new release from WikiLeaks.org is going to be. Still following up, Glenn Greenwald on Salon.com, the strange and consequential case of Bradley Manning, Adrian Lemo, and WikiLeaks. We also, from Danger Room, have DARPA taking fire for its cyber war range. And lastly, on this DEFCON 624, more leaks and more lawsuits. Judge rules that the DMCA, that's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, protected YouTube in their lawsuit brought on by Viacom. We now quickly move to the latest from foodworldorder.com with a story that we went into in greater detail on the latest episode of The New World Next Week. We're going to have to go over it quickly right now as we're running out of time. The Monsanto GM seed ban overturned by Supreme Court. We printed Reposted from the BBC, the biotech company Monsanto can sell genetically modified seeds before safety tests on them are completed, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled. However, the flip side of this, and we can get it from grist.org, as well as an update from this morning from gmwatch.org on how the media got the GM alfalfa ruling wrong, in that basically this story is about the Supreme Court overturning a lower court's ruling, saying that that lower court overstepped its bounds within this legalese world. It doesn't mean, I believe, at this point, that this GM alfalfa is good to go. And again, more from GMWatch.org as well as Organic Consumers Association and all that. Couple related updates. 56 lawmakers asked the USDA to deny GMO alfalfa. More on that from Food Safety News. GM Watch again gets into the Lugar-Casey bill on GM and Bill Gates, and hopefully figuring out what's going on. Bayer withdraws their GM rice application in Brazil. Bayer, of course, connected to the Nazis and all of that. From Time Magazine, cartoon characters sell kids on unhealthy food. If your kid's on the Dora Explorer diet, they'll say that food tastes better when a familiar cartoon character like Dora or Scooby-Doo appears on its packaging, a new study finds. More on this from U.S. News, and this is going to be in the July issue of Pediatrics. And the related story out of the U.K. from The Telegraph, 40,000 deaths a year due to junk food in the U.K. Our last post on Food World Order, and on this episode 175, the 624 Binge and Purge, Food Facts and Fiction. We'll first note that Big Brother is watching you, and he has ice cream. A bizarre advertising campaign. More on that from Consumerist.com. The strange story of the pork board squealing over imaginary unicorn meat. The National Pork Board says it knows unicorns don't exist. The industry group says it was only protecting its trademark when it issued cease and desist warning to online retailer ThinkGeek for calling a fake unicorn meat product the new white meat. Second Oregon salmonella victim to sue ConAgra. More on that from Food Safety News. And as if those first few stories weren't satirical enough, we're going to close out the rest of it with a rapid blast from the only place that really does satire right, with a recent rash of Food World Order related satire from The Onion.
A PepsiCo marketing mix-up results in lemon-lime Doritos. It's the Onion Radio News. I'm Doyle Redland. PepsiCo executives are blaming interdepartmental miscommunication for the recent national rollout of Citrus Blast lemon-lime Doritos. PepsiCo Director of Product Development Jim Schumann apologized for the millions of bags of sweet, tangy tortilla chips now glutting the nation's supermarkets.
We made a mistake. Please bear with us while these unfortunate chips are removed from store shelves.
Schumann went on to apologize for the millions of 2-liter bottles of zesty jalapeno Mountain Dew, also available nationwide. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com. An all-natural food preservative causes all-natural cancer. It's the Onion Radio News. I'm Doyle Redland. The Food and Drug Administration announced today that Friculan-D, a natural food preservative made from processed seaweed roots, causes a rare but healthy terminal carcinoma. FDA spokesman Charles Lapodia has more.
This is a hearty natural cancer caused by exposure to the chemical-free preservatives in soy milk, wheat-free garden burgers, and a variety of other all-natural products.
Doctors say Friculan-D kills 100% organically. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
£96,000 of tainted beef have been recalled today from the Wharton family of Bricksville, Ohio. The USDA issued the recall after E. coli bacterium was discovered at the West Meat Company, which produced and packaged the beef Mrs. Wharton purchased during her grocery shopping trip.
Oh, it was scary. Now every time I bring home a couple tons of beef for my family, I'll be wondering if it can make them sick.
More than 90% of the beef purchased by the Whartons in the past week is affected by the recall, including 2,000 pounds located by federal officials in the Wharton's main refrigerator. refrigerator, another 49,000 pounds in the refrigerator in the garage, and the remaining 45,000 pounds split evenly between the two beef freezers in the basement. While the family was disappointed to part with so much beef, Mrs. Wharton said that she felt lucky.
I mean, I can always make another batch of my 23 meat chili, but really what's most important is my family's health. I'll just go to the store tomorrow and tow home another trailer full of beef. I mean, life goes on.
E. coli is especially fatal in young children, which led to a scare for the Whartons when youngest son Jake complained of flu-like symptoms after eating several dozen flank steaks for breakfast.
My stomach hurt. I felt icky, and I couldn't even finish my beef.
He was sweating a lot more than usual.
USDA officials are investigating if the tainted beef infected any other food products it may have come in contact with. So far, the outbreak appears to be limited to beef. In the meantime, the Whartons will have to make do with their reserve of 6,000 pounds of beef shank crosscuts, with which they had planned to make a stew.
I'd hate to dig up the pork capsule in the backyard unless it's totally necessary.
Moving on now, a new CIA report shows Al-Qaeda is still a thing.
Oh, Onion, how I love thee. You do satire right. My friends, that's going to do it for episode 175 of MediaMonarchy.com, June 25th, 2010. We're going to quickly go out with creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Agricultural Research and Education out of Fars, Iran. They Googled the Black Sun prophecy. The U.S. Department of Transportation. Some company called Civalence out of Washington, D.C. hit me up from Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. We had the USAISC headquarters out of Junction City, Kansas, as well as out of Sierra Vista, Arizona. We had the Catholic Diocese of San Jose. They Googled Pat Tillman. And lastly, we had the banksters at American Express visiting MediaMonarchy.com. You guys, I couldn't have made it to episode 175 without you. I love you and appreciate all your help. We all share this information and open source intelligence, and that's how we're all going to grow and get stronger every day. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.